Koki, the floor is yours.
Yes, thank you very much. Thank you very much for this wonderful opportunity, and thank you for taking time to listen to my talk. So my name is Koki Ho. I'm an assistant professor of aerospace engineering at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign, UIUC. This work that I will present today is partly performed when I was a PhD student at MIT with Professor Olivier Devec. And also my committee member contributed to this work as well, Professor Jeffrey Hoffman at MIT and Dr. Robert Sheshko at JPL. So the work that I'm going to present today is about campaign-level dynamic network modeling for spaceflight logistics. What that means is basically when we plan a mission, we are not considering each mission separately. We're considering a multi-mission campaign. And basically, this presentation will provide us with a method that can evaluate the campaign-level benefits of mission design. So we'll deal with the human space exploration campaign mainly, and we'll see some of the results that that come up with using my method. So slide two is outline. So it's I will give some introduction, and then I will talk about some of the brief background and the proposed methodology about the space logistics network modeling. And then I'll talk about the case study, especially focusing on the ISRU for Mars exploration. And then finally, I will conclude the talk and also talk about some of the ongoing research that I'm doing now at the University of Illinois with my students. Slide three is a background chart. So some of you may have seen it somewhere, because this is a kind of common background chart that we use for all this space logistics research. The basic idea is a paradigm shift of space logistics in human space exploration. So when you think about a past or current space programs like Apollo or ISS, we use a logistics-wise, we use a relatively intuitive paradigm. I used to use the word relatively easy, but actually that's not easy. But let me use the word relatively intuitive. For example, when you think about Apollo, use a carry-along strategy. Meaning for every mission, we carry everything.
Hey, wait, Koki?
Yes.
I don't know if I'm the only one, but I hear some serious back. I don't think it's the echoing any longer. I hear some serious background. So could everybody make sure, once again, that your microphone, your phone, is muted? And thank you, or we may have to ask everybody to hang up and start over again. So please make sure that your phone is muted. Okay, Koki, let's try it. Let's pick up where you left off.
Yes, so I'm in slide three. So I was talking about past or current space programs, especially in human space exploration. If we think about Apollo or ISS, we use a relatively intuitive paradigm in terms of the space logistics. In Apollo, we use a carry-along strategy, meaning we carry everything with us to the destination and then come back. And then for the next mission, we carry everything again to the destination and come back. Basically, it's an independent mission for each of these Apollo missions. And ISS uses kind of the opposite strategy. So it uses a resupply strategy. We have the ISS up there, and then we resupply the consumables, replace the spares if something goes wrong, and we even replace the crew members. So this can be called as a resupply strategy. So all this carry-along or resupply strategy have been efficient strategy because the destination that we have been reaching to is relatively close, and the mission is relatively short. So, but if we think about our future space programs in terms of human space exploration, we are trying to go to Mars, and we're trying to go to asteroids as a step toward Mars, and we're also planning to go back to the moon. At least some countries are planning to go back to the moon. So there are different destinations, and some of the destinations are very far, and the journey will be very long. And also, there are different origins, I would say. So by origins, I mean different organizations are joining this program now. NASA and ESA, JAXA, and also all these commercial players like SpaceX or Orbital, all these companies and as well as Russia and other countries are joining this project. So there are different players in the paradigm, and there are different origins and different businesses. So the logistics paradigm may not be as simple as we had for Apollo or ISS. Maybe there's a more efficient way to plan this logistics than pure carry along or resupply strategy. So that is one of the one of the motivations of our research. And another one is the concept of in space or in orbit logistics infrastructure. The examples including the in situ resource utilization, which is basically using the resource from the moon or asteroid to produce oxygen or life support gas. And the propellant depot, which is correspond to the gas station in orbit. So, and also there are other concepts that have been proposed, like 3D printing in space or the in-orbit servicing capability. So all this capability will change the way we think about missions. So we are not thinking about each mission independently. This infrastructure will be used for multiple missions over a long term. So now we need to think about how to consider this, how to design this infrastructure, how to deploy this infrastructure, considering this, how this infrastructure will be used at the same time. So this is a motivation behind my research. Slide four shows some examples of space logistics infrastructure. As you know, the ISRU corresponds to oil field in space. So we are getting the resource from the in-situ environment. And the lunar ISRU, people have claimed oxygen or hydrogen from it. And also, if there's a water ice exists on the moon, then we can get water from that as well that can be used for life support or for propellant if we divide it into, split it into oxygen and hydrogen. And on asteroids, similar things have been proposed. And also on Mars, we have atmosphere, so we can process that and get oxygen. So there are different types of ISRU technologies, and each of them has pros and cons. And the one of the biggest cons is it takes time to build this ISRU infrastructure. So we need to plan beforehand to see like when we want to deploy this infrastructure, when we want to operate it, when we want to grow it. And this ISRU plant mass is not negligible. You need to send a huge mass to the moon or to wherever you want to do the ISRU. So this is a basically a system level trade analysis. So there is a pros and cons for ISRU. And at the system level or at the campaign level, considering multiple missions, is ISRU still beneficial or not? Or what is the sensitivity of this ISRU capability? So that is a question that we want to answer using the method that I will propose later. And the second example of space logistics infrastructure is propellant depot. So again, that corresponds to the gas station in orbit. Basically, a propellant depot can store the propellant in orbit, and also it can store the structures if necessary. And the location of a propellant depot can be in, for example, in low lunar orbit or in Lagrangian point. Lagrangian point has been proposed to be stable, so maybe that is one option. And also recently, DRO is also another promising location for this propellant depot in orbit infrastructure. But again, the storing propellant in orbit is not for free, so you need to consider the boil-off. There are technology that have been developed and tested to provide a low boil-off rate as possible for this propellant depot. But still, there are some boil-off in general. And if you store it for a long time, then there's also you need active thermal control or attitude control for this propellant depot. So again, there's a pros and cons. And the question at the system, at the campaign level, whether this is still effective or efficient solution for our human space exploration. So those are the questions that we can answer using the methodology that I will talk about later. Slide five shows the research objective at the high level. So what this research or my research in general is dealing with is a campaign level architecture design optimization tool. So this is what we want to provide in the end of this research. And basically, we want to optimize multiple missions and their technology uses at the same time. So we are not only optimizing where we're going, we are also optimizing how we're going. So as a result, it can capture the trade for using multiple technology options. The technology option considered, including the ISRU, again, there are different technology for ISRU on the moon, on Mars, or on asteroid, and so on. And also propulsion technology. We have considered the chemical rockets, nuclear thermal rockets. We are considering the solar electric propulsion now. So different propulsion has, again, pros and cons. So again, at the system level, what is the best choice we want to make? And the best choice often turn out to be a combination of these technology, then what is the best combination that we can have? What are the trades behind it? And also there are new technology that have been developed like 3D printing and in-orbit servicing. So again, what are the trades behind them? What are the pros and cons? And at the system level, at the campaign level, whether they're still useful or not. So those are the questions that we want to answer. And the methodology that I will talk about is a general methodology. It is not constrained by any destination. It can be used for destination for missions to different destinations like NEO, Mars, Moon, or even further. And what I will present today is one scenario for of this of application of this tool. And the scenario I will present today is mainly about ISRU for Mars and using chemical rockets. So basically trying to identify whether ISRU is useful or not, and if it's useful, how we can make it efficient and how we can design the mission that efficiently use ISRU. So, but again, I want to stress that this is just one example scenario that we're doing, and we are happy to apply this to different scenario. We are applying to geo-servicing. We are applying this to the lunar mission, human mission to the moon. We are applying to other missions as well. So this methodology here is in general powerful in optimizing all these campaign level mission analysis. So I use the word dynamic, as you may notice. The dynamic is a keyword here. The reason is we are considering different missions, meaning we are considering the time dimension. So we are not only focusing on one mission, then you don't really think about dynamic. Maybe you just think about this mission, you think about the destination, you think about the staging points to that mission. But now we are considering different mission. We're considering the interaction of the previous mission and the later mission. We're considering a system deployment phase and its utilization phase. For example, if you think about the ISS, it took ISS 10 years to even deploy that. By deploy, I mean assemble. So the assembly phase or deployment phase for this in-orbit infrastructure is not negligible. So that's why we need to consider this dynamic part. And also, I use the word network. That's because we are, in order to enable efficient, computationally efficient methodology for mission planning, we use network modeling. We use mixed integer linear programming. So we extended it to nonlinear at this point with one of my students. But we are using this network modeling so that mission design can be done in a very efficient way, and all these sensitivity analysis and the impact assessment of each technology can be done in an efficient way. The case study I will show later only takes it's a human Mars exploration, campaignable human Mars exploration. It only takes about 1 minute to run in a typical desktop computer. So it is a very computational efficient way. I would say this will give you an ultimate solution for the human Mars exploration. But at least this tool can be used to analyze different scenarios that the mission designer are interested in, and to see what is the best way to use each of these technologies and how useful each of them are. So slide six, we are now starting to talk about space logistic network modeling, some of this background, and also I'll present my methodology. Slide seven, many of you are familiar with the background of this space logistics design, space logistics research field. Space logistics, the word space logistics is defined by ARAA Space Logistics Committee, and it is defined as a theory and practice of driving space system design for operability and managing the flows of materials, services, and information needed throughout the system lifecycle. So there are some keywords here. One is talking about the flows of materials, services, and information. And mainly this work will be about the commodity flow, so physical material. And we are considering that throughout the system lifecycle. Oh, we are not considering only one mission, we're considering the different mission over time. And MIT, where I did my PhD, was one of the first university who started this space logistics research. And one of the projects that started this research was a joint project between MIT and JPL. So it focuses on four important pillars of this space logistics. One is the territorial supply chain analogy. So we're trying to find there, you know, on the ground, we do this kind of logistics optimization all the time. For example, Google tells you what is the best way to reach wherever your destination is from where you are. So why don't we do similar things in space? And what are the analogies and what are the differences? And the second pillar is space logistics network analysis. So this is the network part that I talked about. And third one is to look at the modeling, so look at the demand and supply modeling with uncertainty. So we're trying to see what are the demand of each mission and to see how do we trade this demand and how do we provide supply for this demand. And the fourth one is it's kind of a synergized for three ones, and we will provide a trade space exploration and trade studies for the interplanetary space supply chain architecture. So that was kind of the beginning of space logistics. And slide 8 was software that was developed as a result of this space logistics project. And the software is called SpaceNet2, and you can download it from MIT, the website that is written here. So it is a SpaceNet is a software that can model and simulate the space exploration logistics. It uses a discrete event simulation methodology, and basically, if you input the mission scenario, it will give you the it will provide a demand and the supply analysis, and it will provide it will simulate the campaign and quantify some of the measures of effectiveness that the mission designer are interested in. However, there's a limitation in this space net. It is, as I said, it requires the input of the mission scenario. So you need to develop a mission scenario first, and then you simulate that using this space net. And, but the question is, how do we design the mission scenario? Of course, human can do that, but is there any better way, is there any automated tool to actually give you suggestions of the good scenario, and so that you can simulate it and see its effectiveness. So that is the motivation of my work, and my work is trying to deal with the dynamic space logistics network modeling and use that to optimize the scenario so that it can give you some suggestions of the best scenario that you can do given your technology capabilities, and so that the mission designer can refine it from there. And the next slide, slide number 9, the slide number is hidden, but is about literature on this space architecture optimization. And if you look at, I won't go through each of them in detail, but if you look at the past research, and if you look at the keyword of dynamic campaign level and optimization, most of the research that have been done in the past focuses on either dynamic or a dynamic campaign level analysis, and they don't do the optimization, or they focus on optimization, but they don't consider campaign level or dynamic perspective. So my research provides easy, mathematically computationally efficient methodology to deal with all these three perspectives at the same time, so that it can reduce the burden of a human designer of this human space exploration mission or other robotic space exploration mission. So now I think I spent enough time to talk about the background. I'll talk about my methodology itself. So slide 10 is network modeling. So I've been using the word network. So what is a network that we're talking about? So this is a network that we are looking at. So we have a this is for humans, Mars exploration, and we have Earth, and we have the Moon, and we have a bunch of orbits that is that has been proposed for staging orbits or for resource storage, meaning the propane depot or other use. So you may notice that there are Lagrangian points there, and that there are some transport orbits like GTO or lunar transport orbits, and that there are low lunar orbits, there are LEO, GEO, GTO, and on Mars side there are also Phobos and Deimos transport orbits, and there are low Mars orbits. So all these nodes are potential locations where the resource can be transferred or resource can be stored. And also there are surface nodes on the Moon. There's a lunar south pole. That is just an example. And also there are nodes on the near-Earth object. There are nodes on the surface of Mars, surface of Earth. So these nodes are surface nodes where the material can be delivered to or it can be extracted from if we're using ISRU. So there are arcs that are connecting all these nodes, and each arc has a constraint. For example, the constraints include, I'll show some example later, but the constraints include the propulsive burn. Then you need a propellant to carry something from one node to another node. And it also includes if you carry human there, then you need a life support system for that. You need a consumable for that. And also, if you are having propellant depot, or if you are storing the cryogenic propellant with you over this arc, then you have a boil-off rate. That is also one of the constraints. And also on ISRU, of course, ISRU will produce propellant. So this production of propellant is also one type of constraint. So there are different types of constraints, and the framework I will show later will incorporate all these constraints, but in the context of this network optimization. So the idea of this network optimization is that if you discretize the space into nodes and arcs, then you can use a mathematical optimization framework to just solve a network optimization problem without thinking about the actual location of each orbit. So the next slide, slide 11, talks about one of the basic ideas of the network optimization that we're talking about, and it is called generalized multi-commodity network flow. So it is a idea of a combination of some conventional ideas in the operations research field or ground logistics field. We have a generalized flow. Generalized flow means the network flow where every R can involve gain or loss. So mass is not conserved here. And there's a multi-commodity flow where the network has multiple types of commodity. And in the space exploration context, the commodity includes a payload and the vehicle structure itself and propellant and food. These are the consumables, food, water, and also there's a waste, and there's a structure to support basically the tank structure for each propellant that you're carrying. And also the crew, him or herself, is also a part of the commodity. So commodity basically, again, means everything that is physically flowing over the network. And if we consider this multi-commodity flow, we can consider the interaction between different commodity. So propellant consumption, for example, can be captured as a gain or loss. And also commodity type convergence, like if you consume food, then it will turn into waste. So that is a commodity type conversion, and it is an irreversible conversion unless you have some waste management process. And also both of them happen when you consider the ISRU. ISRU is generating propellant. You are gaining the propellant, but you can also interpret it as you are converting the commodity type from ISRU plant to propellant. And the figure that is shown in the bottom right side is one example, very simple example of a network that we are considering. You might notice that from origin to the intermediate node, there are two arcs that are going in parallel. So this is called multigraph. Multigraph is used when we have multiple transportation options. So one example is, for example, we have a nuclear thermal rocket or chemical rocket. So we don't know which one we want to choose. Or maybe you can have a FTP as well. We don't know which one is good. And then what you do is you leave these both options to the computer, and the optimizer, the network optimizer, will run the optimization and tells you which one is the best to go. And basically, all these parallel arcs will be a Pareto optimal trajectory along the time of flight and delta V. And there is a trade between time of flight and delta V, and you let the optimizer to do that trade for you. So it will tell you now you should focus on delta V, so you should reduce the delta V, for example, you should do SCP, for example. And in other contexts, maybe you should go for shortest flight, maybe you will use chemical rocket. So these trades can be done by the optimizer automatically. So you don't need a human designer to look at each path and see what is the best technology to use. So that's one of the power of this methodology. And at the intermediate yellow node, there is a self loop. So this is used for resource generation consumption. So for example, the ISRU program generation, ISRU is not moving to somewhere else, but there is a self loop here. It is basically growing the program amount over time, and ISRU itself also with some rate is degrading, for example, due to some component failures. So this can be captured using the self loop. Slide 12 has some mathematics formulation for this generalized multi-commodity flow. So we have a network, as you saw in previous slide, and we have arc. For each set of arc from node I to node J, we have a commodity that flow over the arc. And we split the commodity flow into X path and XY. X is a vector that considers all the commodity types that we talked about. And if there are K commodity types, then X has K components. And the flow from node I to node J is expressed using the X plus and X minus. The reason that we have these two is because the commodity is changing over time, over that arc. So X plus is a commodity flow that comes out from node I, and X minus is a commodity flow that's going into node J. And the objective function is, in this case, this is a linear programming formulation. So we're considering a linear objective function. And the objective function in the later analysis I will show, it considers the initial mass in Leo. But obviously, you can choose other types of objective function as well. And now, as I said, with one of my students, we're running a nonlinear optimization for this similar case. So in that case, we can run a nonlinear cost model we can use nonlinear cost model for this objective function so that we can run the nonlinear analysis to optimize the cost over time. And the constraints, there are different types of constraints that we're considering, and we can categorize it into four types of that. And one is the mass balance. So at each node, the inflow and outflow should be balanced. So the inflow should not outflow should not exceed inflow, I'd say. And the gap is within the demand or supply at that node, so which is written as a B. And then flow transformation constraint is used as a relationship between X plus and X minus. So basically how flow transforms from the outflow into the inflow. And the flow concurrency talks about the interaction between different types of commodities. For example, if you have there is an example in the next slide. And flow bound is basically saying every flow should be non-negative. So again, this is a linear programming formulation, so it is computationally very efficient. So that is the benefit of using the linear programming. But again, the reality is nonlinear, of course. And we are trying to develop an efficient nonlinear programming method now. And it will run slower than the methodology that we'll show here, but it will give a higher fidelity result. So slide 13 shows some examples of this B matrix and C matrix. So B matrix flow transformation constraints include the propulsive bound. So we can write the propulsive bound rocket equation basically using this relationship between X minus and X plus. And also consumable, transformation of consumable into waste can also be written in the same type of constraint where you have a continuous
consumption. So you have a differential equation. You will solve that, and the result will be exponential to the time of flight. Unfortunately, each arc for each technology will have a relatively and if you depart the same at the same time, you will have a relatively constant time of flight. So you can use that time of flight so that that part becomes a constant. So the constraint is still linear. There are some detailed math behind it, so I'll just skip some of them given the time constraint. And the C-matrix is used for, as I said, the interaction between different commodities. And in this case, the simplest case is considering the inert mass. So when you carry a propellant, you need an inert mass. You need a structure to support this propellant. So this can be used, this can be written using the C-matrix. So with this constraints, with these four categories of constraints, we can model the space logistics plan. And, but what I have shown here is still a static model. And as I said in the beginning, the time dimension is very important. Slide 14 introduced a time-expanded network. That's the way that we consider the time. Basically, an intuitive interpretation of this time-expanded network is that in addition to the dimension, we're considering, we add one more dimension, which is time. So we are copying the nodes over time, and as you can see in the bottom right figure, so that we can run this whole dynamic optimization as a pseudo static optimization. So in the reason that we need this time dimension, as I said, is because we want to consider different time ordering of the events, and we want to consider time windows, and we want to consider the interdependencies between the missions. And this time expanded network will give a more realistic solution than the static network. Static network, as we found, there's some mathematical proof behind it, but the static network is giving an optimistic bound of the solution. So now let's look at the mathematical formulation, or how we develop this time expanded network, because one of the key parameters of this time expanded network is number of time steps. You're copying the node over time. So if you have a bunch of time steps, then the computation speed will be very, very slow. So we want to reduce the number of time steps as much as possible. And the next two slides, next slide 15 and 16, shows how we deal with this problem. So this is kind of a heuristic way to deal with that. So slide 15 is a basic idea. So basic idea is that we are only considering some important timings. We don't need to really consider all these, for example, 1,000 days for a campaign. We only care about some of the important timings, for example, when the launch window opens, when there is a launch rocket launch from the Earth to LEO, for example, when there is a launch window opens from the Earth system to Martian system to NEO. So these are the critical events that we care about. And for the other time steps, we don't really care about. So, or we care about less. So the idea here is to divide all these nodes into clusters so that the transportation between the nodes, across the clusters, is has time windows where we really care about. So if we do this clustering, we can use the method that is shown in slide 16 to model this space logistics and the dynamic space logistics flow in an efficient way, basically meaning we're reducing the time step. And so the idea is we only consider the time step when that important time windows happen. So for example, in this case that is shown in slide 16, there are three launch window from the Earth to the Earth system, so from Earth to LEO, basically. And so we consider the red box, which is the active state, only after this launch happens. And the idea is after the launch happens, there's a round trip that basically spreads all the commodity that was delivered to this cluster across the cluster. And then after that, we assume that it enters the steady state, so we don't consider the flow in that cluster anymore until the next launch window happens. And if we use this method, we can reduce the number of time steps very dramatically, so that we can run the computation very quick. And in fact, it also gives a more realistic solution, because most likely you don't want to operate the spacecraft every day over that 1,000-day campaign. So basically, it considers the active state and the dormant state for each spacecraft, and makes the operational scenario more realistic. So slide 17 shows after considering these time windows, well, the mathematical formulation change. So the mathematical formulation is similar as the static formulation I showed you, but we have a time dimension now. And because of that, we're considering the transit time delta t over that node from node I to node j. And that delta t is different for each arc. And we're considering different types of constraints, and I won't go into the math here, but it's a similar idea as what I introduced before. It's a multi-commodity flow, there are mass flow transformation, there are flow concurrency constraints, and so on. So now, slide 18. So I'm trying to give some case study to show how we can use this method. So the case study I will talk about is impact evaluation of using ISRU for Mars exploration, especially lunar ISRU. We're also talking about Mars ISRU, but Mars ISRU is probably useful. We have quite a few analysis that show that Mars ISRU is useful. But lunar ISRU, there are some arguments whether it's useful for Mars exploration or not. It's useful for lunar exploration, of course, but how useful it is for Mars exploration is always a question. So this is I will show one of the approach to deal with this problem, and I will show some of the insights we can get from using my method. Slide 19 is a boring slide, so it has a lot of assumptions. And basically, the objective function for simplicity, we're considering initial mass in Leo in this case. Again, this methodology itself, this tool itself, can be used for other objective functions as well. And the variables, we're considering 21 types of commodities that include the payload, human, consumables, and everything else. And the program option, proportion options, in this case, we're not considering SCP, and now we are doing SCP analysis and considering that as well, which is ongoing work. But the work that I'll present today is not including SCP, but it considers LOX hydrogen, considered nuclear thermal rocket, and LOX methane. So basically, it follows the assumption that was made in the DRA 5.0. And we can use error capture as well when applicable. And there is boil off considered. It's a relatively low rate, assuming there is some structure to enable the low boil off program depot. And also, we're considering the ISRU. So ISRU, as you might notice, the ISRU productivity that is shown here is very, very optimistic. And this is a reason, this is one of the reasons that we're doing this, is because we are trying to vary this ISRU productivity and to see what is the sensitivity ISRU technology to the Mars campaign analysis. So we are using different number for this ISRU. And I'm not showing sensitivity analysis today in this slide, given the time constraint, but I can direct you to the published paper that show this analysis and show where the threshold to make this ISRU useful for the Mars exploration. So in any case, so these are the assumptions that I'm using for the case study that I'm presenting here. And in slide 20, so this is actually the take-home message from the this case study, is the concept of bootstrapping ISRU deployment. So in my PhD analysis, in my PhD research, I was trying to run this ISRU for Mars exploration study, and it turns out if you only use ISRU for one mission, you deploy ISRU and you use that ISRU for Mars exploration, it will not pay off, even given this optimistic assumption. This is because we need to send a lot of I saw your plan to the moon, and we need to basically maintain it over time. And then when we use that, I saw your plan already degraded over time, and the propellant that you can get from that, comparing directly going to Mars, the ITRU is not paying off, basically. So, but I thought maybe there is something else we can do. So I tried to use this method, and this is what I get. So basically, why don't we deploy ITRU in stages instead of just deploy ITRU and then use it? So the idea is to boost what we call bootstrapping. So we start from deploy a small stage of ITRU that can be used for technology demonstration, that can be used for just to see what is the productivity of ITRU. And then after that ITRU plant has some propellant generated from it, assuming ITRU is generating propellant. And you can use that propellant to send a vehicle back to somewhere in the middle between the Earth and the Moon. And then you send a new ITRU plant, new stage of ITRU plant, probably with a refined design, and use that propellant and deliver it to the Moon. And if you repeat that over time, then you get basically using the propellant generated from the ITRU for deploying further stages of ITRU. You're only paying a very small, you're only deploying small ITRU plant in the beginning, and you use the resources that are generated from it to make it grow, basically. So that's a self-sustaining or bootstrapping ITRU deployment that I'm proposing. It takes a long time to do that. But still, if you have a right frequency of deploying this ITRU, and if you have a certain assumption, if you follow certain assumptions that I'm making here, then ITRU can be useful, can pay off in one mission to Mars. So basically, the idea again is that each cislunar mission is a round trip between the Moon and the Earth orbit, and you, that round trip is using the propellant generated from the ITRU plant and carrying it back to the somewhere in the propellant depot, for example. And then you use you launch a new ITRU plant using this stop by the depot and using this propellant and deliver it to the Moon. And you repeat that. And the frequency of these cislunar missions is a key parameter. If you make it frequent enough, it can be more efficient. But of course, if you make it frequent enough, then you are increasing the complexity of the campaign. So there's some trades here. Slide 21 shows some results. So we consider three cases here. So the first case is basically OLAP strategy. So we don't have a bootstrapping, so the conventional strategy. And there's some baseline, so I didn't show it in detail, but the baseline is 813 metric ton is initial mass in LEO without using the lunar ITRU. Mars ITRU is used. And for the first case, it's OLAP. And the second case is basically every year there's a bootstrapping, there's a cislunar mission. And the third case is every half a year, every 6 months, there's a bootstrapping, there's a cislunar mission. So every half a year to the Moon is pretty often, but considering the Apollo time frequency, it's not that, you know, unrealistic. And but you can see that if you use the case 2 and case 3, then you are actually decreasing the initial mass in LEO, meaning the ITRU is providing benefits, even if we're even considering the mass that is used to deploy this ITRU, even considering the ITRU degradation. So again, the findings is that with the OLAP strategy, traditional strategy, ITRU is not paying off. But if you use bootstrapping strategy, ITRU is paying off. So, but the reality is not that easy. Reality is not a, this is not a yes-no question. It is more like, what is the best way of using ITRU? And what is the best way of having this access? What is the productivity that we want to aim for? So, this quantitative result I'm showing here will depend on various assumptions. For example, ITRU predictivity and also inertial mass fraction of inert mass fraction of each rocket and so on. But the methodology that is shown here can be very useful to analyze how ITRU can be useful, because in the traditional approach, we didn't think of using this bootstrapping for Mars exploration. So let me conclude, because it's close to the end. Let me conclude my talk and talk about some of the future research directions that we are thinking about right now. So slide 23 is conclusion. So again, what I was trying to do, the objective was to develop a campaign level architecture design optimization tool. And the strength of this tool is that we can provide architecture level global optimization. We're not looking at one design and looking at the local analysis. We're doing a global optimization. And we can provide architecture level sensitivity analysis, meaning when you use the technology, we can optimize the architecture so that that technology can be useful, so that we can make a fair comparison of different technologies. It's not given one architecture and you use this technology, use that technology. Of course, some technology will be better fit with that architecture, but that's not the point of the benefit of using a technology. It's more like, what is the best way to use this technology? And that gives a fair comparison of the technology. And also, this work I showed is just one case study, and it is a general methodology that can be used for different missions, both robotic mission and the human mission, and also it can be used for different destinations, either on the moon, on asteroid, to the Mars, onto other Lagrangian points, or somewhere else. And again, it's a low computational effort. That's the key. So it can run this analysis very, very efficiently so that you can use it in the initial phase of your mission design. And the limitation is that it's a linearizing system. So there are some points that makes the result sound unrealistic. So this is where what we're improving. So we are presenting three papers in AWS Space 2016 in September. And one paper is about using the SEP, solar electric propulsion. It is a hot technology now. So we'll see how this will be integrated into the campaign level analysis. And again, the point is that we are not saying SEP is better than chemical or not. We're just saying how we can integrate this SCP into this mission campaign analysis. So most likely in the results, some of the mission will be performed using chemical rockets and others will be performed using SCP. And which one is better, this tool tells you. And this tool will tell you which one is better where and when we want to use which technology, basically. So it's a combination of these technologies. And then it's we're also interested in trading with ISRU. So whether ISRU is still useful if we have SCP, or ISRU is just useless if we have SCP. So this is also another trade that we want to look into. And also the second paper is about mixed integer nonlinear problem. So we're considering a higher fidelity model for the vehicle, for the ISRU plant, and so on. And the third one is design optimization for the on-orbit repair refuel station. That's another type another type of in-orbit infrastructure. And we want to consider 3D printing capability and to see, to do a stochastic modeling and using some of the queuing theory to see how useful these technologies are. And all these research are some steps to our new field of campaign-level astrodynamics and mission design. We are looking at a multi-mission at the same time, and it will open up a new field, new research direction to make this mathematical tool more useful for a mission designer. And the last slide shows some overview of the SCP analysis that I just talked about. So most likely the solution will say, we expect that it will say, SCP is used for infrastructure deployment because it's mass-wise very efficient, and but it takes very long time. And the chemical rockets can be used for human missions. So what is the allocation you want to have for each of them? And what is the best timing for this SCP infrastructure deployment? And what is the efficiency that we want to achieve using this SCP? And and basically, how useful this infrastructure will be. These are the questions that we want to answer. And there are some mathematical modeling behind it. We have inner loop optimization and outer loop optimization. It will be slower than the method that I presented today, but still it can give the solution very efficiently and provide useful intuition to the mission designers. So this is an ongoing research example. So this is all I want to talk. Sorry, it's already close to three, but I'm happy to answer any question.
Great, Koki, thank you. That was very good. And also, this is Harley, also very tutorial, which is for many of the folks who listen in, I think it was very nicely targeted. Got two questions, and we do have time to run late. We got started late because of all of the echoing, so I think we can run late if your schedule permits. So two questions are, one, and once again, I have to apologize because I was off fussing with our phone system to see if I could improve the background noise. Maybe I succeeded. Maybe it's just by chance. So I may have missed where you covered the following two questions. One is, if precursors or demonstration activities are required, ISRU would be a good example, or SCP, which you closed with, where you may have to have an extensive series of demonstrations or precursors. How is that handled in your system? And then secondly, if you have a situation like, again, ISRU, where recovering, for example, water for use as propellant from the surface of the moon may be trivial. We may find big hunks of ice cubes on the surface of the moon, and it'll be very exaggerating, obviously, trivial to extract water from them, or it may be really, really, really tough. The water may be embedded within the rock, so on and so forth. Very expensive versus very inexpensive. What dial do you play with in your system to handle expense? And then this is the former question, how do you handle the issue of precursors?
Yes, thank you for the question. So the first question, I think, was how do we handle the constraints that comes from precursor mission? Actually, I already said that it's a constraint. So basically, mathematically, it's basically a requirement of some technology. For example, if the technology has a low TRL at this point, we want to raise the TRL, and we need investment to do that, including the precursor missions. And that can be handled as one type of constraint that happens for is applied over time. So for example, if we want to send ISRU at time t equal three years, then you want to have a precursor mission at t equal 2 years to basically demonstrate that it works or not. And there's we can consider some stochastic modeling to see what is the potential of having, you know, finding it precursor successful or not. And then this analysis can be used again at that time to see what is the best strategy if it fails, partially fails, or succeeded. And again, the benefit of this analysis is that it runs quickly. So you can basically use that to plan on the fly to see what is the best strategy given the current situation. So that is the usefulness of this, another power of this method. So again, it's handled as a constraint. And the other question, I think, was how do we deal with the difficulty of ISRU process, for example? And it can be handled as mass or time or cost. So basically, you don't know how hard it is, and it may require a lot of mass to extract the water from the moon, or it may require a lot of time. It just takes time to do that, and you don't need that much mass. Or it just requires cost. You need to design a very, very expensive instrument to do that. And so in the beginning, maybe there are some uncertainties in it. And again, we can start from a precursor mission and narrow down that uncertainties, and then run this model again and to see, given the current uncertain rate, what is the best thing we can do. So these are the way that we can use this tool to handle that. And again, this is not a tool for a specific mission. It can be used for any mission, for any scenario, under any assumptions, as long as it follows mathematics in it. So, and I'm happy to, if some of the listeners are interested in to use this tool and use that to design other missions, I'm happy to customize this tool and work together to see how this can be applied to other missions as well. Thank you very
Great.
Much.
Thank you. Great, thank you. That's very kind. Do folks have, again, if Koki can stay, do other folks have questions?
Yeah, and this is Tom Sullivan. I've got a quickie. Years ago, I remember reading some ISRU type studies that just proposed using water and producing steam for thrust. So it's like the hero's steam engine of 2,000 years ago, which would, you know, possibly work with nuclear thermal. The pluses are that it's extremely low tech on the initial ISRU side of things. It's a very storable propellant, if you want to call it that, monopropellant. Of course, very low efficiency as far as ISP. Still, there's I've always been fascinated by low-tech approaches. This tool that you've described might be a real good one to use to take a quick look at that again based on more modern approaches, to see how that plays against much more process-intensive but more efficient propellants.
Yeah, thank you for the question. And I think that's a very good suggestion. And this tool can be useful to analyze the pros and cons and do the trade analysis. And this is a perfect example. There are pros that is storable and is simple, so it has low risk. But the cons is that the efficiency is not good. And this tool can be used to do that trade. And I'm happy to look into that.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks.
Other questions for Koki? Great. Koki, again, thank you so much. It's in a good way, it's taken us a while to get you to work a schedule with you, but I'm glad that we took the effort. And thank you so much. And again, we put your email on the materials we sent out, as you did. So you may have some of our students getting in touch with you. So thank you again, and thank you for all the folks who dialed in.
Thank you very much.
And talk to many of you next Wednesday.